Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
In the morning, outside my motel room. 8 o'clock in the morning. Good thing I don't have a gun. Leaf blower, leaf blower. Holy, holy. Leaf blower, leaf blower. Good thing I don't have a gun. 2:30 in the morning, the band has crashed at Sugar's house with all the windows open. Guess who's mowing his lawn? Drunk neighbor, speed freak neighbor. Holy, holy. Drunk neighbor, meth head neighbor. Good thing I don't have a gun.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find, temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
He's green, so don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
One more time.
Oh, sounds like we're having a lot more fun here than we really are. But we are having fun. It's just that, you know, sometimes as you... It's like leaping off a cliff sometimes when you're about to turn on the microphone and do a radio show. And wait a second. And see, I've got this here. I could stop that. We'll just let that run out and hope that we can play everything here in the right order. Good morning. Wow. It's weird looking across there and seeing Carol instead of Wayne Besson.
I know. You were busy this week.
I was busy this week.
How was that, Mike?
It was intense, is the way I would describe it.
Yeah.
Intense. It's a little more laid back here on Sunday mornings. One of the things I found out, though, is...
Well, you should explain.
Explain what?
That you were...
filling in
for
Stephanie Miller with Wayne Besson from I've Got Issues. He's on Saturdays. You probably listened to him yesterday from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm saying it was intense, simply the idea of doing 3 hours, 3 days in a row, 9 hours of radio, filling in for stuff. And it's when folks are up and about and going to work and driving, you know, it's Sunday, they're sleeping at home. They're sleeping in church. They're sleeping wherever they sleep.
At this, on the bench.
On the bench.
Wherever.
I think. Yeah, you could be right.
No, I don't know. But yeah, I caught your show early in the morning the last couple 3 days. But I'm also on my way to work too, so I wasn't able to listen to the whole thing.
And the thing is, Wayne's amazing. The guy works so hard, and his brain is just going at 150 miles an hour at all times. Where I'm,
no, that I don't think that's true.
Well, we have
your brain is definitely moving.
We have, yeah. It's true. It doesn't necessarily connect, but it's moving.
But it definitely seemed like you guys had lots of topics all going at the same time.
We did.
Yeah,
that's the thing about that kind of a program. You got a lot of balls in the air. You're juggling a lot of things, a lot of different, and it's all that politics stuff. I have to tell you, I mean, we got to do some environmental stuff, which was cool. But coming back here on Sunday with my peeps.
We're chill.
Carol and Helen. Helen, you're there, right? Oops. It would help if I turned on your mic. There you go.
Yeah, that would help.
Yeah.
There you go.
See? It's laid back here. We just kind of... but I want to thank... What I was going to say is what I found out from doing the show... On Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, filling in for Stephanie Miller, is how many people listened to this show on Sunday. And people were writing to me and said, hey, love your Sunday show. I'm glad you're on this week in the morning. And I got the impression that it's people who don't normally write to this show and let me, I mean, I don't know that they're out there, but then suddenly when I was on during the week, they wrote to me and said, and I love your Sunday show too. And they said that about Wayne too. Love your Saturday show too. And that was great stuff. It was really, really fun. If, as I said, very intense. And then of course, yesterday, was the big rally, at Daley Plaza for the Great Climate March. And I will be really, really honest about that. I think there should have been more people there. I'm not going to blame the organizers.
As far as the turnout or as far as the speakers, things like that?
No, the speakers, you know, you get, you know, they're invited and they speak and they all did a great job. I wish there had been more people at Daley Plaza. The police were bored. They had the police lined up. They were bored. I mean, not because of the subject matter, just because the crowd control wasn't necessary.
Well, it could have been worse.
How so?
They could have been not bored.
Yeah. Yeah, and then mischief ensues, right?
Precisely.
Yeah. But the rally with the folks who were there was great. And those people are dedicated and they marched. And some of them have walked all the way from L.A. to be there. We got a call pouring in there for you there, Helen. Some of them were marching in from L.A. and some of them marched in from Oak Park. And those people are wonderful. And the people who are there, I'm saying, great. Why didn't we have 100,000 people to talk about how our planet is going to heck in a handbag? You know, that's what I don't know and what I don't understand. And yet, I'm assuming that there are folks are out there working in their own way to make these things happen. I certainly hope so. That's the goal. So I should tell folks, you know, along that line, my speech, and I alluded to it on Friday when Wayne asked me, you know, what are you going to talk about? Well, I said, they gave me 3 minutes. I said, so in 3 minutes, I'm going to talk about what you can do in 3 minutes to make a difference. And we popped that on. It was on Facebook. I don't even see it on Facebook now. I don't know where. Oh, yeah. 3 minutes to a better planet. There it is.
I just posted it just now, too.
Okay.
On Facebook.
Cool.
So if it...
And it's on my website, mikenovak.net. Right on the homepage, right at the top, we did a YouTube of my little talk, and I kind of did a list of what you can do in 3 minutes or less for a better planet. And some of them, you know, you can't get it done in 3 minutes. For instance, call your congressman, but you can start it in 3 minutes. You can pick up the phone and dial And then you might get put on hold or you'll talk to a staffer, but there's no reason why it can't get done in 3 minutes. And that's the idea. And I've got it up there, and I hope people can go and look at the YouTube video of that. And I hope people can continue to pay attention as the march moves on to D.C. and it moves on to New York City. On today's show, hooray, we're going to talk gardening in the first hour. The lovely and inimitable Melinda Myers is here. She will be talking. We're headed into fall, folks, and this is the best time to work on your lawns if you're lawn obsessed. Even if you're not lawn obsessed, it's still the best time for you to work on your lawn. And it's a time to think about getting your garden put to bed, that sort of thing. So Melinda Myers is here, radio, TV, web star, author. I've got one book out. She's got four books out. It shows you the difference. In the second hour, a couple of unrelated things, but great things. Lynn Prucher from Rogers Park Food Co-op is going to be here. Yet another group of people. I've talked about the various folks like Chicago Market and the one in, now I see, and I'm going to blank on it, the one in Oak Park, the Sugar Beet Co-op, and the, how folks are getting together to have a say in the food that comes into their markets and the stuff that they can access and make sure it's fresh and local. Now that's happening in Rogers Park in Chicago. And Lynn Prucher will be here to talk about that and the fundraiser they have coming up. And then after that, the wonderful Kay McKean from SCARCE, which stands for School and Community Assistance for Recycling and Composting Education. That's a mouthful. Basically, they're interested in everything that has to do with reusing, reduction, recycling, all that stuff. Rethinking. And in this case, they're trying to help businesses find a way to compost food scraps. They have a forum coming up for that. And Kay, and we'll talk about other stuff with her. So let's get this puppy rolling. Oh, and second hour also, some music from a friend of mine and a friend of the show. And his name is Bruce Henry. He's got a new CD out called Live and Natural. I suppose I could give you just a quick little taste of it. Sounds like Sunday morning music, doesn't it?
The falling leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves are red and gold.
Anyway, that's Bruce Henry. We'll be playing some more of that and all the information you need about Bruce. And autumn leaves are starting to fall, yes. And we'll have that in the second hour of the show. I'll be playing some more of that stuff. What was that you had there, Helen? Talk to me.
People are saying the signal's fading in and out.
Okay. I think we're having some issues with the AM signal. No, it's okay. You can say that. They should know it. So if you're having an issue with your AM signal, go to FM. 92.5, 92.7, 99.9 FM, or if you if possible, stream online. You can go to MikeNovak.net or ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. Sorry about that. Little technical issue, and we'll keep you posted. We're working on it, and folks should let us know when things clear up, or if they don't, just keep us apprised. All right, we'll be back with Melinda Myers. Stick around for that. Gardening Talk, 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. Whatever question you got, we'll handle it. She'll be here in just a sec.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in mosquito dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
Attention, gardeners, attention! You are under attack!
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
That's right, Jean-Luc Picard. The funniest book ever written about gardening is now invading the planet Earth. Author Tom Ogren says, okay, this actually is the funniest book I ever read about gardening. Mike Novak is a hoot. New York Times best-selling author Amy Stewart stopped writing books for 2 minutes to say, I never thought that a description of powdery mildew would make me laugh out loud, but that was before I picked up this book. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Starship Enterprise says,
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
See? He's absolutely obsessed by the book. Get your copy today. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. That's aroundtheblockpress.com. Be the first on your block to embrace the attack. Resistance is futile.
Hi, this is Ron Calga from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to IllinoisSolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at IllinoisSolar.org for more details.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
And this is where we go to the phone line and bring, and I'm going to have to ask her, Melinda Myers, how come you didn't drive down to Chicago? You just, you know, a little bit north of here. What's going on? You got a busy day going?
I do. We're going to shoot some video tomorrow. And of course, like every good gardener, I have a few weeds to pull before we break out the camera.
I totally get that.
Session time. You know, it's been so rainy. And then to have a day off when it's not raining is always a good thing. So I have no exciting plans other than pulling weeds, which actually is a great day for me. So.
That is a great day. I mean, that's Isn't probably it? If you're like me and this is a lot of people I know in the business. Landscapers and people who work in garden centers and writers like you, they have no time for their own gardens. This year, it's not been so bad for me. What I found is if I can get out to the garden, three or four times at critical junctures in the season, I can pretty much keep it under control.
You bet.
Yeah, you can't let it go too long. You gotta step in there every once in a while and just clean up a few things, pull a few weeds, tweak this, tweak that, and you can usually keep it under control. But the problem is at this time of the year, especially when it gets cool and there's been a copious amounts of rain,
yes,
things start to get a little nutty. They grow fast, and you forget that things can grow fast.
You bet. And then I'm doing a new project for Great Courses on edibles. So we've been shooting my I ex- made a big vegetable garden with lasagna gardens and raised beds and amended soil. And, you know, I forgot how much zucchini can really produce when you have space. So, yes, I'm also in that mode of harvesting and cooking. How can we eat zucchini tonight?
Well, the person you need is my friend Zan, who is on Twitter always. And she's on this morning. I saw her tweet already. And she is, she's got like 117 ways to cook zucchini.
Okay.
So I think you might need to get a hold of her.
I think you're right.
773-763-9278. Come on, folks. I know you got garden questions. I know it's the end of the season. You want to know how to harvest. You want to know what to do with your lawn because, this is it. I mean, now that the cool weather has hit, and we're in the second week of September, you cannot find a better time to work on a lawn. Right, Melinda?
You bet. And it's all this time and effort you put in the fall that helps really make your lawn vigorous and better able to compete the weeds so you can use fewer chemicals on your lawn or no chemicals if you choose and still have good results. You know, research out of, I think it was Rutgers or Cornell, found that just by leaving your clippings on the lawn, and with all this rain, you've been mowing a lot this year, it really not only adds organic matter and nutrients, but they found significant weed reduction with lawns where they've left the grass clippings.
Really? Does it suppress the weed germination?
I think, and I also just think it's probably the good practice that a lot of us do anyway. You know, they didn't really cite what the cause was, but they were saying they were finding that. And then I think it was University of Wisconsin found that one fertilization a year can reduce your weed population by as much as 50%.
Simply because, I would assume, because the lawn, the turf, is growing better. And that's always one of the goals, is get your turf to outcompete your weeds.
Yes, and if you're leaving your clippings, you're probably mowing often enough or chopping them into smaller pieces so they break down. There's moisture, there's organic matter, and there's nutrients. So you're improving the soil, too. So you're right. It's all about making the lawn healthier so it outcompetes the weeds. And this year, with all the moisture, at least in our area, we really didn't have a period where the lawns browned out at all. You know, it wasn't extremely hot except for a few days here and there, but nothing like the last few years. The rains were pretty well spaced, sometimes a little too much, but, you know, our lawns were green for all summer, which really gives them that opportunity to start, you know, crowding out some of those weeds that really jumped into our lawns with the drought of the last few years.
Yeah, you know what I found myself doing last week was I was out there with the weed digger and going after the violets that had sprung up in my turf, and I need to overseed a little bit. I have neglected that. I think that's one thing that folks should pay attention to at this time of the year. If your lawn is a little thin, and you've got weed pressure, and we were just talking about encouraging the turf to grow, well, get more turf.
Yeah,
you know, throw some seed down, and then when they germinate, grass seeds germinate. They provide more of a mat that, again, keeps the weeds from germinating. And then in the spring, they get established in the fall. That's why this is the right time, because they get established in the cool weather, and then in the spring they'll be ready to rock.
You bet. And if your lawn is compacted, and especially if you have clay soil, it's very easy for, you know, years of use or just poor preparation from the person you bought the house from, of course, not you. And core aeration pulls plugs out, and that's a great time to overseed because you get good seed-to-soil contact. And, of course, I have to put the plug in from Allorganite. Everybody knows I'm a big fan.
Wait, let me hit that again. There we go. Actually, I was going to do that, too, because you mentioned an organic fertilizer, and Allorganite's an organic fertilizer, and you're a big spokesperson for Allorganite, and they're a great sponsor on my show. So carry on. Do continue.
Thank you. And because it's low nitrogen and slow release, one of the real benefits is if you are overseeding, it's not going to hurt those young seedlings. And so it's great. And it's slowly released over a long period of time. So you're encouraging good growth, but not lush succulent growth that you have to mow all the time. So it's really a better, healthier growth for your lawn. They also, research has found, University of Florida found, that when the microorganisms work to release the Allorganite, it releases some of the phosphorus and potassium potassium bound in our soil. And phosphorus is good for root development, but most of our soils have high to excessive levels. We don't need to add more, so we're making use of what's there. And potassium, you'll see that quite often in winterizing fertilizers because it's good for winter hardiness and disease resistance. Well, we've got it in our soil, so the Milorganite, when those microorganisms work on it, help release it and make it available to the plant. So that's that added benefit that you're putting to work things that are already in your soil instead of adding more and causing interference with the uptake of other nutrients.
We're talking to Melinda Myers, and I should make sure that folks know where they can go to find information about you. You should know, first of all, see, I've got spelling issues with my name. And
me too. Yes.
N-O-W-A-K, well, Melinda has spelling issues, as she said, with hers. It's M-Y-E-R-S. So you want to go to MelindaMyers.com. And the great thing about her website is tips galore. If you're looking for good information, you've got videos, you've got bullet points, you've got a little bit, you got the interactive hardiness zone map, for crying out loud. That's a really cool thing.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yes. So my goal is just like yours, is make it easy and make it fun. You know, if you're not having fun in your garden, I'm not doing my job, because, you know, weeding and those kind of things can be therapeutic. Too much can be maybe not the best thing. So we need to look for ways so that you can get the enjoyment out of your garden and the results that you're looking for. So that's what my team and I are trying to do.
Yeah, I find that in my garden beds, the weeds don't seem to be as much of a problem. I don't know why. And I can't even remember the last time I mulched. Now, some people, you know, Roy Diblick at Northwind Perennial Farm, he has gone over to the opposite end. He says, mulch doesn't happen in nature, so why are we throwing wood chips down? You've heard that, right, haven't you?
Yes, and he's chopping things up and using the plant material,
right,
as mulch, just like nature does. So it's a different type of mulch. Instead of the wood chips, it's the shredded leaves that fall from your trees. If you don't leave them in, you know, you can't leave them on the lawn unless you chop them up, which is a great way to recycle them. And I'm with him. I love shredded leaves and evergreen needles and things that we usually bag up and haul away.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them on your property because, boy, they break down quickly. They make good soil. The reason you don't need to weed much is you've probably built a great foundation, good soil preparation, healthy plants that quickly grow, outgrow the weeds, and that's a great way to reduce your weed problem, is just by having healthy plants in the garden as well, because they're bigger, more robust, they shade out the weeds. You know, you may have a few things hidden underneath, but who cares? If the big plants are thriving, they're going to choke out the weeds, so that's the way to go.
Yeah, and I'm trying, and I went earlier this year, I went to one of the native plant sales and kind of went nuts with some natives, because I decided I'm changing the look of the garden. It was about time to go a little more native. I mean, I have a lot of natives there, but I wanted to go more. And so and I have a lot of shade. So I was edging towards sedges and grasses for shady areas. I got blue lobelia, which I think is just wonderful.
And a lot easier than the cardinal,
yes,
the red lobelia. I find it a lot easier and great impact in the garden too.
Yeah, and the first season, I mean, it was a little 4-inch pot. I had three of them, and all three of them just bloomed like champs. I was surprised that they did so well. My helianthus, they got a couple of blooms out of that because they're still small. But in a couple of years, they're going to be rocking. And my goal is to get so many of those plants together that they do crowd out the weeds. That they sort of they rely on each other and prop each other up.
Well, and you're a city gardener, and sometimes when people think of native plants, they think of these prairie-like gardens and these kind of areas. I mean, back in the late 70s, early 80s when I started, people were like, oh, those are messy. But you can create a garden with natives if you're worried about having a more of an ecosystem with lots of grasses and the flowering plants mixed in. it sounds like you're making a garden of natives, and your neighbors won't even realize if you're worried about your neighbors getting a little crazy about, oh, look at those, that wild garden. It's, you know, we did some of that when I worked for the city. We had areas that were out on the edge of the city to reduce our maintenance. We did garden beds that used mostly natives, and then those really further out, we tried to use fewer beds and make it mostly short prairie grasses and forbs and flowers to reduce our maintenance but maintain a beautiful garden as well. And I think there's so many cool things you can do with native plants in traditional gardening style as well as informal and native gardening style.
You know, I want to get back to something here that you said earlier because it is something that I've become aware of, and I always forget to ask this question of my experts when they're on the show, and that's the phosphorus question.
Yes.
I was doing a story for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine several years ago and did a lead test in my backyard because I was looking for lead, and they were through the roof, okay. But that was a different thing altogether because at the same time, you get the levels of other nutrients in your soil. My phosphorus was through the roof. And as you said, a lot of people have that and they don't know it. It persists in the soil, as we know. But the problem is in the old days, and I say the old days, 20 years ago, you'd pick up a book and you say, if you want blooms, get that super phosphate and you got to make sure you got the phosphate in the soil. Well, we're finding out that it's there, and we're actually having problems with too much phosphorus. So what do you tell people about that?
You know, and I was lucky enough to work for Extension and looking at soil tests over time, and those levels continued to build, and a lot of it was the superphosphate or use 10-10-10 fertilizer. So you can't take it out of the soil, bottom line. It's there. With high pH soils, which we typically have in this part of the country, that phosphorus is bound to the soil. Don't add more because you're just adding to the problem. Adding organic matter and getting those microorganisms active in your soil is another way to release that phosphorus from the soil as well. So if you have good soil health, you know, lots of organic matter, you're working on improving that tilth using organic fertilizers like the organic nitrogen, malorganite, you're going to have that phosphorus take it out of the soil and make it available to the plants. You can't take it out, but the plants can if it's in a form that's available. But adding more just builds up the amount in the soil, and then that can interfere with the uptake of things like iron as well. So you end up creating more problems by adding more. So I always cringe like you do when I read those, hey, you need to add that super booster flower fertilizer and put more phosphorus down. And, you know, a lot of fertilizer companies are changing their formulations. I think gardeners are becoming sensitive. It is bound in the soil, so it's important that we keep the soil contained so it's not washing off. Erosion can also wash phosphorus.
Two words, Lake Erie.
Yeah.
All right. That is phosphorus at work. When they can't drink the water in Toledo, it's because of the phosphorus.
Yeah.
And to some degree nitrogen, but really mostly phosphorus.
Yes. And so we can do things as gardeners. I mean, we often blame other people, factories, and those are important things, the farmers and things. But as gardeners, I think we have a great opportunity to change our habits if need be and spread the word and help others.
So you're confirming what I'm saying because it feels to me as if there's been a shift and but nobody's saying it out loud, which is to say we used to tell you to put a lot of phosphorus in the soil. We were really kind of wrong about that, and you really need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, and I agree. And I've been delivering this message and had quite a few intense meetings with people, especially selling products, not malorganite, but about this and telling gardeners this because I saw the soil test results. And this has been 20-some years ago. And Extension, bless their heart, the reason they have in garden books they say 10-10-10, not mine, but is because it's easy. Okay, you can't mess it up. Well, yeah, you are. The plants don't use phosphorus and potassium in the same quantities it uses nitrogen.
Well, okay, I can tell you how you not mess it up. When you go organic,
Yeah.
Those levels, you never get to 10. All right.
Exactly.
It's like 2, 1, 4 or 3, 3, 2, 2 or, you know, they're all very, very low numbers.
Right.
And you can now find products that do not have phosphorus at all in them.
In fact, lawn fertilizers in many states containing phosphorus are banned unless you have a soil test. And I think that's great, because I think a soil test is where you should start if you don't know what you have. And biosolids like Milorganite in some states are allowed because that phosphorus is non-leaching and it's plant available. So that's why they're not included, like in the ban in Wisconsin, where phosphorus-containing fertilizers are banned for turf, not the garden, but for turf.
Well, but here's the problem with that is in Illinois we have that law too. But it's for applicators. It's for professionals. You are not allowed to put phosphorus on a lawn unless, as you said, the soil test indicates that it needs it. Well, I'm trying to imagine a soil test that indicates you need phosphorus.
Exactly.
But the loophole is the homeowner. And they're you know, this should those products are still there with the phosphorus in them. And folks, as you know, don't do soil tests as often as they should. They don't read the labels. They don't follow the labels once they read them. And then we get all this excess phosphorus in our soil and other things that we don't need.
Right. And it's a waste of money. It's bad for the environment. It's a waste of time fertilizing when you don't need to. And one of the other reasons I like working with Milorganite is because they know I'm not going to tell you to fertilize if you don't need to. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the product they sell. But they also know that I'm not going to tell you to fertilize if you don't need to, because we fertilize way too much, our gardens, our trees, our shrubs.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. I tell folks that in garden talks, when it comes to trees and shrubs, fertilization is overrated.
Oh, definitely.
Throw down organic matter, wood chips, Roy, if you're listening, Roy, I'm talking about trees and shrubs, not your garden. but put wood chips next to trees and shrubs, and that's great because as it breaks down, it provides nutrients and organic matter, and biology to your soil.
Right. And the lawn fertilizers you're putting on the lawn, because those tree roots go 2 to 5 times the height of the tree away from the trunk, they're getting some of that fertilizer from your lawn fertilizer. Or if you're planting flowers underneath it, or shredding your leaves and using that as mulch or wood chips. And really, for new plantings, you want to wait a year for trees and shrubs to do any fertilizing, and a low nitrogen, slow release fertilizer. And then only if your plants need it. You know, let your plants be your guide. You know, I think it's spring and everybody feels like they need to fertilize.
Well, drives me crazy, because they say, well, it's spring, so you need to put fertilizer on your lawn so it'll green up. Hey, guess what, folks? That's what lawns do in the spring. They green up.
And if you fertilize them, you'll be mowing even more.
Yeah. And the other thing you said that I really like is that the fertilization once a year for a lawn. I have seen a lot of the organic lawn care people say once a year is all you need. And this I'm not into the 4-step thing because it's too much product. Stop buying into that is the way I feel about it. And this, if you're going to fertilize once a year, right now is the best time to do that. Wouldn't you agree?
Now is a really good time if you want to do 2, late October. If you're using an organic fertilizer, even it's late October, early November is a great time to do it as well.
Yeah.
One of these 2 times, somewhere in this time zone, if you're going to fertilize once, best time to do it. So you've got a big window, so you have no excuse.
All right. We got one quick question we can get in here. Is that Kaida? Is that you?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Kaida?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question for your guest. I was thinking about, as far as weed control in my garden, if I would just cover the whole thing with landscape cloth and dump about 3 layers of mulch on top of that, and then just make cuts in the areas where plantings are going to be. Is that a good idea, or does it make sense? Just, you know, kind of give me some advice about that.
All right. I'm going to have to speak first on this, Melinda.
I'm thinking we share the same opinion about landscape fabric. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right. Kaida, landscape fabric is fabric, but it ain't landscaping. That's the way I feel about it. It's like all you're going to do is cause yourself trouble, because at some point you're going to want to dig someplace else, and you're going to dig down there, and that landscape fabric is going to be there, and it's just going to get in the way. You can do it a lot more efficiently without that stuff. I got no use for it. Melinda, I think you agree with me.
Well, and here's the even bigger problem, is that organic mulch you're going to put on top of it is going to break down. So the fine material from the compost is going to plug, so the air and water doesn't get down to the roots of your plants. So that's bad. So they, you know, it says, oh, it lets air and water through. It does initially. Then the other problem is, then you have compost on top of your weed barrier, and you've got all this good stuff on top that's not reaching your soil below. And I've had cases where, you know, you're in your own yard, but people buy a house, and, you know, every year they put more wood chips on top of the weed barrier, more wood chips. And then somebody else buys the house, or they hire someone.
Yep.
They plant in the wheat in the decomposed compost. They don't even know weed barriers underneath. When I was teaching on our campus, they had put layers of this stuff in, and I would find turf growing in the decomposed wood chips on top of the weed barrier. It was awful to remove. I would pull this weed barrier out. It would girdle trees and shrubs. So believe it or not, doing organic mulches, the shredded, if this is a vegetable garden or flower bed, shredded leaves initially, you know, as you're getting your garden established, and we all have plenty of that in the fall, evergreen needles. You know, short-term, you see great benefit from weed barrier. Long-term, it's a mess.
Yeah.
I used to make my students who were in maintenance go and rip out weed barrier, because I said, I don't want you putting this stuff down. This is what happens.
I go to these shows, and horticultural shows with the booths, and they've got the weed barrier, and I'm going, oh, really? You guys still doing that? You still selling that stuff? But that's me. Kaida?
If you put the mulch on top of it, and then make cuttings where... This is a vegetable garden, so I'm probably just go straight container or something. I'm sick of weeds. They're making me angry.
Melinda's got an issue. All right, answer here.
Are you doing this? Would you rip up the weed barrier in the fall, work your soil, put it back down in the spring, rip it up? You know, if you remove it every year and then work your soil... I've seen that work. It's not the prettiest, but I've seen that work. But then you've got to remove it every year.
Yeah, that's the problem. It has to be accessible to get it out of there, which seems just like a lot more effort than it's worth. Kaida, I'm going to have to let you go because we're flat out of time. But great talking to you, and good luck.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with the weeds. Oh, boy. I'm just not a fan of the barrier. Okay, before I let you go, I know you're doing a talk at Pasquazi. This is on the...
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say it's on the 20th of September at Pasquazi Home and Gardens. They're at 975 North Shore Drive in Lake Bluff. From 11 to noon, you're doing your presentation, Fall Prep for a Beautiful Spring Garden, and then question and answers. What could be more fun?
You bet. And I wanted to say I've met a couple of your fans at our state fair who said to be sure to say hi.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, big fans. Do you know Mike Nowak? He's great. I said, yes, I know him, and yes, he is great. So you got a bunch of fans, and thank you for the plug. And please, I hope a lot of your listeners will join me at Pasquazi. We always have fun. It's a beautiful setting. If you can't, you know, you'll be surrounded by plants, ideas for fall, and we'll have a lot of fun.
And I'm going to give you another plug. You've got four books out, okay? The Midwest Gardener's Handbook. That's not even a year old yet. And I've got the links to all of them on my website. You have the Midwest Gardener's Handbook. The Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide, because as we know, Wisconsin and Minnesota are the same state. the Michigan Getting Started Garden Guide, and Month by Month Gardening Minnesota in Wisconsin. And all of those three are by Cool Springs Press. Who published the Midwest Gardener's Handbook?
And that was Cool Springs Press as well.
Cool. So that cool. They got them all. All right, and I have to say, since we last spoke, I have a book out now.
And I love your ad. It's great, both online and I was listening to it as I heard. So I can't wait to, that's going to be on my list of fall reads. So I can't wait to.
And of course, you'll put it on your website, right?
Oh, of course I will. Because you can plug it in the e-newsletter, one of the fall newsletters.
Because I've been waiting for months now with you with the four books. I finally have mine, and I get to say, in your face, Myers!
I'm feeling very humbled and you're up here in Wisconsin.
You shouldn't.
Congratulations. That's
all right.
Exciting.
Melinda, always great talking to you. Go to melindamyers.com, M-Y-E-R-S. See her at Pasquazi Home and Garden on Saturday, September 20th at 11 a.m. You and I will talk again real soon, I'm sure.
You bet. Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com, right in your own backyard.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakenings features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
WCPT's Mike Novak is going to be at the Green Metropolis Fair Fall Harvest on Sunday, September 14th. The Mike Novak Show will broadcast live at the fair from 9 to 11 a.m. at Chicago's historic Lakeview High School, located at the northeast corner of Irving and Ashland. You'll enjoy workshops on organic gardening and sustainable living, yoga classes, activities for kids, great food, and a retail marketplace filled with hundreds of ecological products and services. Admission and parking are free. Get all the details at greenmetropolisfair.com or mikenovak.net.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It keep raining and raining. Oh, tears from my eyes. Since you've been gone, all I do is cry.
I always cry when I bring in Rick Tamayo, but it's because sometimes the forecasts aren't what I want to hear.
You mean by the end of the week?
But why? What's happening by the end of the week?
Oh, what do you got to read to that?
Oh no! Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
So are we? Is another one of these blasts headed our way?
Well, blast defining meaning cold or warm.
I meant cold, as in, yeah. You know, this is the pattern.
Cold by the end of the week.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't want to talk about that right away.
No, because yesterday was such a beautiful, beautiful day.
Yeah, and I spent the entire day in a friend's house in southwest Lower Michigan in Cass County. And the drive through there was amazing. And the berries, the beans, the apples, the corn. I mean, this is harvest season, Mike. And it's, you know, we're enjoying the fruits of our bounty. And believe it or not, this woman has 2 acres of farm. Well, not really a farm, but it's 2 acres. And she has this wonderful organic garden where everything was tomatoes. Everything that we ate was relating to tomatoes that her and her friends grew. Isn't that cool?
That is wonderful. Yeah, and as you've pointed out many times this season, even though some people, you know, people who love the beach and want to just get hot and sweaty might not have had the best summer for growing stuff, it's been really, really good.
You mentioned it wasn't good for tomatoes, right?
Well, I'm not the only one. I've talked to folks who said it just took a long time for their tomatoes to ripen. It took longer than usual. But not everybody. I've had some people say it was a great tomato year, but I've also had a lot of people say it was a lousy tomato year. So I take them all in.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I had asked her, and she says, yeah, it wasn't a good year for tomatoes, but I think maybe that's why the theme of the party, of the get-together, was anything with tomatoes, because I think you could do a lot with tomatoes, and because there were a lot of not-so-good tomatoes, you took the good part of the not-so-good tomatoes and you did something good with it. How about that?
We did that in our community garden. Was it yesterday or the day before? Kathleen and I were there, and we were picking some tomatoes, and there would be a little hunk out of it or something, you know, and you go, well, what happened here? Well, cut that part of the tomato off. And it's great. It's wonderful.
Right. And then to use it. So I missed you at the top of the show. How did the march go?
What I said about the march was great. We had great speakers. I wish there had been a few more people. I'm just reporting. I'm telling you what I see. I'm interested in this. You know, I would love to have said, hey, we had 10,000 people. No, we didn't.
No. You're not going to get that for that.
Well, I know, but you know, my feeling is we can do better. We can do better. I don't know how we do better, but we can do better.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think that's the way most situations go these days with public activism. It just doesn't seem to be there as much as it used to be, or as it should be, or it could be.
Yeah, well, Kathleen was telling me, she said maybe what folks think activism now is making a post on Facebook.
Right. Yeah, I think, yeah, we've definitely gone away from being in the thick of things to, I guess, I don't know, in the thin of things. You know? I don't know if that's the best way to describe it.
There you go.
It really is. And, you know, one of the things that Loyola University is doing is they're actually, and I think this is really great with their Institute of Environmental Sustainability, is they're inviting all of the students to a meet and greet your professors this coming Wednesday. And, you know, usually you have that kickoff at the beginning of the semester, but this is 2 weeks into the semester, and I think that's when a lot of students go, yeah, I kind of like this, or maybe I don't, and I have some questions. And I think that's really when you need to reel them back in, you know, is to have this kind of second, you know, sort of like rejuvenation of how things are going at the beginning of the semester. And sometimes you need that with activism as well, and you never really know what the pulse of the people are. It's kind of tough. It really is.
Yeah.
I
give credit to the people who are marching. They walked from L.A. They walked, you know, to Chicago. They're going to walk to D.C. You know, I hope tomorrow some of them show up on the southeast side at 5 p.m. Right. To protest. That same march is going there to talk about Petcoke and what's going on.
Right.
You just want to see the big numbers. But you're right. It's not going to happen for every march. It's just not. And you remember the really, really great marches in history, and they are rare occasions. They're rare occurrences.
Right. You know, next Monday, and we'll talk more about this next Sunday when we have more time, but I'm giving my winter outlook to a group of snowplow operators. And the way that the way that this particular meeting or conference or seminar is titled is winter crisis. And I talked to the guy who was running. I go, why are you calling it a winter crisis? He goes, we had so much cold and so much snow last year that everybody is obviously worried about it. There's going to be a repeat performance. But in addition to that, there's such a short supply, Mike, of salt that the salt that they were paying for last year generally went for about $75 a ton. Now it's going for $150 a ton. That's double.
Wow.
And on top of that, the supply is down. So when the demand goes up, the supply goes down, what does that happen? Is it the price? The price goes up. So everybody is concerned about, you know, how the upcoming winter season. So in the next 2 minutes here, I'm going to talk about how next week may actually be kind of like, I don't know, if you want to think about it as maybe kind of like the preseason kickoff to our winter, because everything is showing us to have a somewhat rapid warm-up. Gorgeous yesterday, as we mentioned earlier, gorgeous today. Probably upper 70s to probably low 80s during the day tomorrow, and it looks like a fairly good chance of rain tomorrow night into Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the bottom drops out. We're looking for areas of northern Montana, southwestern Canada, and even into North Dakota to probably have their first season of snow. I should say the first seasonal snow, with temperatures probably dropping into the 20s and maybe even to the upper 30s across Minnesota and Wisconsin come Thursday and Friday. So the lack of any El Nino this year, which really just shut down about midway through the summer, has allowed this big reservoir of cold air across western Canada to kind of migrate eastward. So while temperatures will not get anywhere near a frost or a freeze around here, they're going to get really close. Central areas of Minnesota, central areas of Wisconsin by Friday, where it's going to begin to make people think, particularly the farmers, whether they have to have an early harvest. So,
oh, my goodness.
Definitely some cooler weather arriving here next week. And this time next weekend when we're talking, we may actually have readings in the 40s with the wind and a cloud cover as well. So it's going to feel a lot like the middle of October rather than the middle of September. It's going to be a quick change.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah. It just won't quit this year. Just it keeps pummeling us with the
yeah,
cool weather.
You know, we finished out the summer with 3 days of 90 degrees, and I said it climatologically, and we're not going to have another 90, so we're done with that. So definitely some much cooler weather on tap by the end of the week. It looks like it sticks around for a while.
All right, next week, will you give us your winter forecast as well?
Yeah, we can do that. I'll have that all ready for by next Sunday, Mike.
That sounds great. All right. Tune in next week, Rick DeMaio, the winter forecast. It's September 7th, Rick.
The fall outlook, right?
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good. Bye-bye.
All right. Food co-ops and food scrap composting in the second hour. I hope you stick around for that winter.
It's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And I bet you didn't know I could play sax like that, did you? No, I warned you earlier that I would be playing some music from Bruce Henry's new CD, Live and Natural. You can find the information on my website, MikeNovak.net. He's a friend of the show. And if you like jazz, you might want to pick it up. You can order the CD. There's a link to it there. Or you can go to BruceAHenry.com. BruceAHenry.com. We'll play a little bit more of that in a little bit. A couple of things I wanted to get to. A couple of tweets that relate to what we were talking about in the first hour. Of course, Annie Haven with her Moopoo tea. Wait, there we go. We were talking about stuff you put in your soil. Natural nutrients. You don't have to worry about too much phosphorus if you're using Moopoo tea. So there you go. That's and again, and I mentioned that before. It's a lot of the natural stuff is what you're not going to have to worry about. And then my buddy Tree Guardian wrote about the fabric, the question we had from Kaida about putting fabric. And if you missed the first hour, you missed a great conversation with Melinda Myers from MelindaMyers.com, M-Y-E-R-S. And we were talking about some of the nutrients in the soil and how much phosphorus is in our soil and how it has increased over the years. And you really need to be careful about what you're putting down there. And the other thing, but the subject of fabric, landscape fabric came up, and I'm not a fan of landscape fabric. Get that stuff out of here and get out of my face. Tree Guardian writes, it keeps water from getting to the tree roots, but weed seeds germinate on top of it. Bad stuff to put over tree roots. I just, Kaida, I love you. Get rid of it. Don't use it. Don't go down that road. That way lies madness. In the studio right now, and she's putting her hands up in the air going, woohoo! Is it Prucher, by the way?
Prucher,
see? Nobody tells me this stuff. Lynn Prucher, who's a member of the founders group of the Rogers Park Food Co-op. Welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here, Mike.
It's wonderful to have you here. And you're like the, this is, it's been co-op summer on this show. Because I've had folks representing different co-ops, and it seems to be a kind of movement now where folks get together in an area like Rogers Park, and they say, you know what, we want to have a control of the food we buy, where we get it, how we get it, who the farmers are, the quality of the food. Making sure it's locally sourced, that sort of thing. You were one of the people in the very first meeting about this, I assume.
Not exactly.
But close, right?
However, everything you say is true, and the birth of the idea came from starting the Glenwood Food Market in Rogers Park. So they have the market is just once a week for a few hours. And mm-hmm. there were a couple of people that were like, oh, why can't we do this all year? And so
you can is the answer, right?
Right. That's it. And it's getting enough people together mm-hmm. and creating it really within in the community and wanting to do that and wanting to bring those vegetables and foods that you were talking about in the first hour mm-hmm. that are so locally and healthfully grown into the city where, you know, people don't have necessarily their own garden, but still want to eat good, healthy food. And I've
had Chicago Market here. They're in the process of putting this together. You guys are in the process. Sugar Beet Co-op is in the process of doing this. Do you guys communicate with each other? Do you see who's doing what, and is this working well, and what can we use in our tactics?
Oh, yes. One of the founding principles of a cooperative is cooperating with each other.
Funny.
Yes.
Funny how that works.
Right. Really working together. I was surprised. I really got involved about December and have been involved and have been amazed to learn what a network there is within the world and within our own country. I went to a startup co-op food convention in Indiana, and there were people from literally around the whole country. There were people from Alaska starting co-ops, from as far west as California, East New York.
Where was this and when was this?
This was in the spring in Bloomingdale, Indiana.
So somebody under whose auspices was this?
And well, there I don't remember. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know
who organized it, but it could have been the Indiana group. And there's a non-for-profit organization called the Food Cooperative Initiative that's available for information on site and that helps food co-ops, because you have people like myself that don't necessarily have experience in growing a grocery store.
Right.
And this way we have professional information that is available, and that's available to everybody starting a food co-op.
So would I be sucker punching you if I asked you to tell me what you learned in the last year that you would not do again, that in starting this? Is there anything?
Well, I think the thing is you learn as you go along. There's the founding principles of what to do and how to do and when to do it. But the biggest thing is learning also how to engage people, because people come up with the idea of starting a food co-op. But since it is a cooperative and it is the community working within the community, it's the people in the community mm-hmm. that make it happen. And you have to reach out to the community, which is what we're doing here right now on your talk show as well, to let people know that this is a possibility. It can be done. And what we found is by talking to people right now through the through a presence at the Glenwood Food Market, there are other people that have also had the idea. And so you have isolated people that have heard about co-ops and would like to get something started. And it's gathering together.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that people who listen to this show in Rogers Park will want to get involved. But I also hope that people who live elsewhere can start to think, wow, we could do this. How would it start with an email to somebody and say, hey, let's just sit down and talk about this idea? Is that it? Is it as simple as that?
It's as simple as that. It's as simple as having that idea. You can contact any food co-op, and they'll be able to give you direction and guidance and where to go and where to look for more information. That's a wonderful idea. It would be great to have a food co-op in every neighborhood, and there's no reason why we couldn't. You might also like to know that the United Nations declared in 2012 to be the year of the co-op, because it encourages more cooperation and it gives significant positive impact on the local community and the economy, besides bringing good, healthy food.
But there's got to be a downside, too. You know, democracies are messy things. And, in terms of a co-op, you haven't even reached the critical point, which is now we've got the members, now we've got the money, now we have to put the building together, and we have to make real decisions on this. And the idea of the co-op is that everybody participates, correct?
Correct.
And you've seen what happens in condo associations where things – they have reputation, a lot of those associations, of being nutty and out of control, and people get in their little fiefdoms and they decide they're going to run. And you're nodding over there, Carol. Have you experienced that yourself?
I'm just thinking in terms of just anytime people get together and it is, when no one is getting paid, which I don't know if that's the case, but people want to have control. And that's just what I'm thinking.
I think that's the scary part to me.
Okay. Well, and instead of working together. So.
Okay. So we have these resources available that have existed for decades that have experience. And so you have a structure. So with the food co-ops, the idea is each household has one vote. Anybody can be put up to be elected to the board. There is a board in place.
So there will be a board. How large is your board going to be? Is it there already?
The present board has 5 members, and we're aiming for 9 eventually.
Okay.
And so there's a board in place. There will be a general manager. Roles are assigned. Regular meetings are held. Board meetings are open to the membership. But there is a structure in place. This is a viable business, you know, that will be run based on the cooperative principles.
Is it incorporated? Does it become incorporated?
Yes, yes. Okay. We are incorporated.
All right, just making sure.
Right.
Yeah. I would assume you'd have to be. I mean, you're going to have a building and everything. It's going to be, you have to have the legal structure as well.
Yes, yes, yes. This is, all these proper steps have to be in place.
So are you already looking for, all right, you're trying to get to 300 members.
Yes, the first step is 300 members. And we're, in fact, having a fundraiser as a way of reaching out to more people coming up in 2 weeks.
Funny how that works. You show up on the show and you're doing a fundraiser in a couple of weeks. I'm happy
ground.
To promote it for you. What?
Yes, at the Uncommon Ground restaurant.
Yes, where I did my book signing for Attack of the Killer Asparagus. That's actually why you're here today, in part, Lynn, because the Raise the Rooftop Farm is a benefit for the Rogers Park Food Co-op, and that is on Saturday, September 20th from 3 to 5 p.m. What's going to happen there?
Well, it's also a family event. That's why we're doing it on a Saturday afternoon. We're going to get to go up to the rooftop farm, which was the very first organic rooftop farm on a restaurant in the whole country.
Yes, it was.
And there will be face painting for the kids, and we will have the farmer. There's a full-time farmer up there, and we'll get a tour of the garden, a farm, as well as a presentation by the farmer.
Fabulous. And, you know, folks come, and obviously it's in the neighborhood. Have you started looking for spaces? Are you identifying places that you might put it together yet?
No. What happens within the structure that that's recommended to follow is to first get 300 members.
Oh, so you need a critical mass.
Need a critical mass first, and then a feasibility study is done. So everything is done, you know, not ad hoc. Oh, what should we do? I think this is really a cute place. Oh, Dominic's.
That's the way I work. I don't understand why it doesn't work for you. I mean, back in the day when I was helping to run a theater company, every time I'd walk down a block, I'd go, oh, that building would be great. We could put a theater in there. We could do a show. And that's the way 20-somethings think.
Yeah.
So you got to be a little smarter than that.
Well, I think you need a mixture. You don't want to get too stodgy either. But sound footing is a good idea.
But so it's all in due time. Just one step at a time here. Get the process going. Let's start with fundraising and getting your folks in line, your 300 members.
And that's the important part, because it's not, you know, three people that get an idea that make a cooperative grocery store. It's really the community and getting them together. And one of the other advantages to the co-op grocery store is that it'll also have a teaching aspect of it. So there will be classes to teach people about good, healthy food, what to do with it.
You eat it.
Well, okay, not everybody
and you fix
knows
it
how.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's one of the things I've learned, and a lot of people learn when they have a CSA, when they grow their own. Sometimes you grow stuff because it looks nice. There are things that you can grow because they look good in the garden, and then you have to figure out how to eat them. If you know, because you grew them for one reason, and now you're harvesting, and you think, well, what do you actually do with this? Carol, have you experienced that yourself?
Yeah, no, I really like this because there are some things, especially if you're not like a fantastic cook, that there's vegetables and things that you don't know what to do with. So if you are teaching people how to do any cooking or, you know, how to, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a fabulous idea.
And not only that, Rogers Park is a multi-ethnic community. It has a reputation of being in the top five most ethnic communities in the whole country. So,
is that a fact? I did not know that.
Yeah, and it really is amazing. And there are other foods that I don't even know what they are, just like you're saying, and what to do with them. So it would be good to learn.
And we mentioned on the show just the other week when we were talking about the global garden. And these are people from Burma and Bhutan, mm-hmm. and they bring some of their favorites, and people learn about growing them and what dishes they can use them in, and it spreads.
Yeah, and there's lots of markets that in all over Chicago, Devon Market, and you know where you go in there. At least I go in there, and I have no idea some of these vegetables, and other people are picking them up.
Why are you picking that up?
Yeah, and I want to follow these people and say, what can you tell me what you're doing with them? But they're used to growing. They're used to using those vegetables, and so that would be interesting because, like you said, it's such a diverse community.
My question is: have you gone to Alderman Joe Moore yet to see, is he on board with this, or is that too early?
Oh, yes, he's an advocate, and he put notices on his newsletter mm-hmm. about our event and in his office.
Because I happen to know his chief of staff. I'm just telling you, I've got a connection there.
Oh, well, good. Well, make sure you mention
now, you probably know her, too, so it probably doesn't make any difference, but... and you're actually, you know, I'm looking at your, you brought in a, thank you, by the way, for, a bag. I now have another wonderful, reusable bag. Let's, we can get this, on Twitter and Facebook.
Good.
Is that better?
That was good.
We're taking pictures here, folks.
Yes.
We need a camera.
And
you got one already. I mean, you've already got the co-op bag.
Well, it's
kind of a generic co-op bag, but it's great. It's cool.
That's a special, you're right, generic co-op bag, because the first 100 members who joined to become co-owners of the co-op for $250, one-time payment
good
to own a store.
That's it? One-time payment?
That's it. You know, because the idea, again, is many people.
Mm-hmm.
Many people.
And once you get it going, the idea is that the produce itself and the business itself will support itself.
That's right. And so the first 100 to sign up will get a reusable co-op shopping bag. And our website is in process right now.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about that because I know you got a Facebook page, but not quite a website. So you're working on the website now.
Yes, Rogers Park. foodcoop.com, and that's
so you have the domain. Is there anything up there?
We have the domain. There should be a space that you can go to right now and sign in for the newsletter.
Can you do that on the Facebook page as well?
Oh yes, the Facebook page is up and running and a good place to go.
Yeah, and you can just go for Facebook if you want to find this. It's Rogers Park Food Co-op. That simple, and it'll pop right up there. If folks have a question or a comment about this, I'm interested in folks who have done this themselves in other places. 773-763-9278. If you want to talk to Lynn Pruker and me, 773-763-9278. It's already going out on the Twitter sphere here, so we're getting that word out, and I hope that the folks want to join in. Hang on for a second, Lynn. We'll get back to you in a second. When you open the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, well, you're going to walk smack into a brick wall of reality. Hey, don't blame me. I'm just the messenger. I mean, you heard the dose of reality today from Rick DeMaio. Last week, in this spot, I told you about maintenance musts as we head into fall in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. There's another article called Winter Gardening. How about early spring, which gets you thinking about next year? You starting to see a pattern here? Well, you know, it's that winter is right around the corner. Now, if I'm you, I go to the story called Herbs Step Out, which is how to take your favorite accents from the garden and apply them to your favorite libations. The good news is that, like from all of the stories that are featured in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, you're going to learn a ton of stuff. That is, of course, until you come to my column on the inside back page. It is a fact-free page, and I'm proud of it. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Pick one up at newsstands all over town. Or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Attention, gardeners, attention! You are under attack!
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
That's right, Jean-Luc Picard. The funniest book ever written about gardening is now invading the planet Earth. Author Tom Ogren says, okay, this actually is the funniest book I ever read about gardening. Mike Novak is a hoot. New York Times best-selling author Amy Stewart stopped writing books for 2 minutes to say, I never thought that a description of powdery mildew would make me laugh out loud, but that was before I picked up this book. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Starship Enterprise says,
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
See? He's absolutely obsessed by the book. Get your copy today. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. That's aroundtheblockpress.com. Be the first on your block to embrace the attack. Resistance is futile.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy, but sad of eye.
You're listening to Bruce Henry. As I said, he's happy to do a little plug for him and his new CD, Bruce Henry Live and Natural. He's singing about me there, Nature Boy, I guess. A very strange, enchanted boy. Yeah, well, some people think I'm enchanted and very odd ways. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. In the studio, I'm very happy to have Lynn Pruker, who is with the Rogers Park Food Co-op, and it's just getting together. I find the whole process kind of fascinating, especially since this is the just one of the many directions we can go in now to get fresh local food to our stores. But you're talking about the business benefits of it for the community as well.
Yes, because since the food co-op is loaned by the people in the community as opposed to somebody that lives someplace else, more money actually stays within the community. They found that for a statistic show that for $1,000 spent in the store, $240 more stay in the local community than in traditional grocery stores.
Well, that's a really good point. I mean, that model or that statistic or that whatever issue applies to franchises in any business, in any area, you know, anything. If the more local you have, the more money stays in the community, basically. And so this is a great way to have that money be recirculated.
And even more so when that franchise or business is locally owned by the larger community. What happens with co-ops, too, is there are patronage rewards. Once the co-op is up and running and profitable in about 3 to 5 years, usually, then those co-owners who have been shopping in the store actually get about at least 20% of the profits feed back into those people that are co-owners and have been shopping in the store as patronage rewards. The more you shop, the more money you get back.
And I notice in your materials here, you mentioned something we've talked about often on the show, which is that less than 5% of the food we buy is produced in Illinois. And every time I see that statistic, I'm blown away by it, and people should be. They just will wonder, what does that mean? Well, it means we grow a lot of corn and soybeans in Illinois that are not necessarily used. Well, they don't end up on your table. They end up soybean, various products, and corn, various products, syrups and things like that, and also feed corn and so forth. But what we eat on our table are called specialty crops, which is what I always find pretty fascinating, too.
Yes, because the local farmers need a local market. They need somebody to be buying food. They need somebody to be encouraging. The CSAs have helped with this, and the more co-op grocery stores that we have, the more input they can have. They can be growing more diversified crops, which is also better for the soil. In fact, they found that there's three times the co-op sources from three times as many local dealers that the conventional stores do. Four times as many locally sourced products are sold. Four times the amount of donations are to charitable donations, and that can also be local charities. We certainly have plenty in the Chicagoland area.
And I noticed that you talked a little bit about this before, but just to emphasize that the goal of this also is to make the price, keep the prices low. And you have planning to have special programs for low-income customers, LINC and WIC benefits, assisting low-income households with the purchase of an equity or the ownership of the co-op, pricing discounts. And the other ways you do that to keep things low is buying and selling products in bulk. And according to your numbers here, you can save consumers about 35%.
Yes. So the idea is to have take everybody into consideration and yet at the same time run an honest business where employees are actually making honest money.
No thumbs on the scales, right? No thumbs on the scales here.
Well, but the idea is the employees traditionally have better wages in a food co-op than in a traditional store.
Uh-huh.
They have more opportunity for health care benefits. So we want to be, honest in that sense, equitable.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming to the studio because you're not, sort of a straight shot west, not quite a straight shot, but from Rogers Park, Lynn Pruker. And let's remind the people that your event, Raise the Rooftop Farm at Uncommon Ground, is on Saturday, September 20th from 3 to 5 p.m. It's $40, but kids 12 and under are free. It's a family event, as you said. If you go there, like they did with me, and I really appreciate when they do this, you can get 10% discount coupon for dining at Uncommon Ground, which is great. I've got the link to Brown Paper Tickets on my website. You can go to MikeNovak.net, and on this week's show, it's there. And, of course, there will be raffles and hors d'oeuvres. and refreshments that are donated by Uncommon Ground. They're great people. They just and it makes sense for them to do this too. It really does. This is right in their wheelhouse, right in their mission.
Right. It ties together.
So folks, take advantage of it, especially if you're up in Rogers Park. You know, you should join this, and we're going to have this city full of these wonderful businesses to keep people healthy.
Let's party.
Okay, can we start now? Do I actually have to do the end of the show? Lynn Pruker, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
If you're a gardener, you might want to attend the 12th annual Renegade Craft Fair September market today in Wicker Park. Speaking of stuff going on in the city, in Wicker Park on Division Street between Damon and Paulina, market hours are from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. But I mentioned gardening. And that's because Christy Weber Farm and Garden is offering 10% off any one purchase when you show them your stamp or ticket from Renegade Craft Fair. And because it's September, the mums and ornamental cabbages are now in stock, not to mention the perennials, trees, and shrubs, which you have plenty of time to get planted this late summer or fall. Believe me, they will take, and they will look great next year. And here's a breaking news. Christy Weber Farm and Garden will be on the Windy City Coop Tour 2014. Why not show off their own chickens? Those days, September 20th and 21st, also the day of the benefit we were just talking about. But on September 20th and 21st, it's the Windy City Coop Tour 2014, and you can make a stop at Christy Weber Farm and Garden. Those are also the dates of their Harvest Fest and Design Harvest at 2200 West Grand Avenue in Ukrainian Village. So there's going to be a lot going on there. Bring family and friends. It's going to be fun. Find Christy Weber Farm and Garden on Facebook, online on CWFNG.com, or spell it out, ChristyWeberFarmAndGarden.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
WCPT's Mike Novak is going to be at the Green Metropolis Fair Fall Harvest on Sunday, September 14th. The Mike Novak Show will broadcast live at the fair from 9 to 11 a.m. at Chicago's historic Lakeview High School, located at the northeast corner of Irving and Ashland. You'll enjoy workshops on organic gardening and sustainable living, yoga classes, activities for kids, great food, and a retail marketplace filled with hundreds of ecological products and services. Admission and parking are free. Get all the details at greenmetropolisfair.com or mikenovak.net.
Boom. Yeah, while we're there, while we're talking about that, next week. Carol, you going to be with us over at the Green Metropolis Fair?
I am, and it's at Lakeview High School.
Yep.
My son's alma mater.
Is it really?
It is, yep.
Well, there you go. Well,
it'll be
like old home week for you to walk through the halls again,
right?
Oh,
yeah. Yep. No, I know those
looking
teachers.
For a teacher to yell at. And
No, I liked them.
What's wrong? My son is the best. Why did he get a D on this? Yeah,
something like that. But
Sarah Batka is going to be there, too, from our team.
Yay.
Helen, unfortunately, you're stuck answering phones here. You're in the studio. What? I got you up. I don't know. Try that again.
I just said yep.
Oh, well, it's hardly worth that. Okay.
Nope.
But next week, we're broadcasting live from Lakeview High School. And it's quite the event. Boy, I was looking at their flyer, and you can find all of this information by going to greenmetropolisfair.com, or you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, go to this week's show, and you can find greenmetropolisfair.com link there. Mary Beth Rebideau of Green Parents Network has just done a fabulous job putting this together, and there's just so much going on. Alderman Pawar is behind that. In fact, I'm going to interview him next week. That's going to be part of the show. He's going to be on it, and we'll be talking to him about various issues. There's hands-on friendly, family-friendly activities, the retail market, food market, presentations on canning and preserving, fall gardening, sustainable living, and energy saving. Ron Cowgill from Mighty House will be there. Let me find the thing, because we've got him. He's doing something called Green Technology Bringing It Home from 12 noon to 12:30. He's going to show you how to save energy, control costs as the cold weather approaches. And Rick DeMille says it's right around the corner. But he'll be talking about new technological advances. As I said, Sarah Batka, who is the Chicago Master Gardener Coordinator with the University of Illinois Extension, and a team member here on the Mike Novak Show. We don't see her as often as we used to, but she's still part of it. She's doing a seminar on winter composting. You think you can't compost in the winter? Well, guess again. She's going to be there as well. There's family yoga, Jeannie McQueenie puppet show. I interviewed Mikey the puppet when we did the Green Metropolis Fair in the spring, which was really a hoot. The insect petting zoo is there. That's one of my faves, where you get to pet. Now, see, you're shaking your head. No, you don't like petting tarantulas?
No, I don't. And roaches. And no.
Hissing Madagascar
no
cockroaches.
Snake. No.
You don't like those? Oh, they're fun.
No.
Kids dig it.
Yeah, they love it.
And I dig it because emotionally I'm about 12, okay? There'll be the Ask a Master Gardener table. I'm telling you, this is going on all day. Starts at 10, goes to 4. My show will be in its usual time, 9 to 11. So we're going to kind of get the thing rolling. And I'm going to have a bunch of great guests on there. Oh, and one more thing I got to tell you about. I'm going to be on a panel. I'm forgetting all this stuff. The Monarch milkweed seed launch we're doing right after my show at 11:15. It's a Monarch butterfly plant seed release. So I'm bringing my milkweed pods, and a bunch of people are bringing the milkweed pods, and we're going to let them go. And maybe, you know, some people want to take them home. I bet we could spare a few seeds, get some milkweed started. And then finally, last but not least, there's a panel about creativity, discovering and nurturing the genius within you. I'm not exactly sure why I'm on that panel, but Mark Ernest, who's an author, who wrote a book called The Delta Project, and he works here at WCPT. Is going to be the moderator. Ina Pinkney, who has been on this show, who's a wonderful chef. You might remember Ina's on Randolph, and she was on the show recently. She's part of the panel. And Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune. So the three of us, Ina, Scott, and me, are going to talk about creativity. And this is going to be moderated by our own Mark Ernest from WCPT. So I'm really looking forward to that. So go to, as I said, greenmetropolisfair.com. Go to my website, mikenovak.net, and I've got a lot of this explained there. Go to this week's show. And we hope to see you next week at the Green Metropolis Fair Fall Harvest. Come on. little more of Bruce Henry here, and Lynn hasn't left the studio yet, and you mentioned something. You know Bruce as well?
Yes, because I've heard him at Unity in Chicago on the north side, right near Rogers Park.
I saw him in concert there once myself. So there you go. More information on Bruce Henry, go to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show and scroll all the way down, or just go to bruceahenry.com. I like that song. You did a really good version of Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself. Let's go to the phones and bring in Kay McKean. Kay, how are you?
Hi, Mike. I'm really good. How are you?
Wow. You've had a lot of coffee today, haven't you?
I don't drink coffee. I'm kind of caffeinated all by myself. So.
You'd have to be. You would have to be because of all the stuff you do with Scarce, which is school and community assistance for recycling and composting education, which nobody remembers, but they remember the word Scarce.
They sure do. It's been a really busy, busy summer, probably our busiest summer ever.
Why? Why do you say that?
I'm not really sure why it's happened. I think green is finally, like, over the top. But more and more teachers are finding us to come and get books. I gave more programs in July than I've ever given in July. So garden clubs and civic communities and churches and businesses, it didn't get a summer break, really. Everybody just kept going, moving towards sustainability, which is pretty exciting.
I've got some boxes of books for you, Kay.
I want them.
All right. Kathleen, if you're listening, let's get them together. Get them out to Scarce because Kay knows what to do with them. Where would they go?
Well, depending on what you've got, but right now we're helping so many groups with community gardens, churches and park districts and businesses and schools are building more and more. So any gardening books, I have lots of places for those to go. And then, of course, depending on what they are, we've been sending books to Rwanda and all over the place, just really all over the world. So books are in hot demand.
I love what you have when you send out an email to people. And I put this on my website because it made me smile because right after your signature, you write, "We collect any and all books, musical instruments, school and office supplies, crayons, cell phones, inkjet cartridges, keys, eyeglasses, American flags, clothing buttons, and yarn."
and right now we're in big need. I need 5 sewing machines, not the kinds with a table, but, you know, like the little portable sewing machines.
Ah.
We've got a project that works with refugee women, and every fall they need 10 sewing machines, and I have 5. So I need 5 more. They even have guys who can kind of, like, take good parts from one sewing machine, put them into another one to make a working sewing machine.
How big can they be? What's the size limit?
Just those portable ones. They have their own little suitcase.
All right.
Not the ones with the table, but just those portable ones. We've got a big need for 5 more of those this month, actually. So, it's been really quite incredible. And again, with the community gardens, we've been able to help them. You know, some people, maybe they find out their tomatoes don't go well in their yard, not enough sun.
Yeah.
So they bought all the tomato cages. So people have been giving us tomato cages and different kinds of structure for gardens.
Wow.
We had one person who's given us 3 rain barrels because they're selling their house and the family that's getting it doesn't want the rain barrels, darn. But we got those to a church in Glen Ellen. And so we've been able to get shovels and small gardening tools to quite a few community gardens getting started, everywhere from Lombard to Naperville. So we're really excited to get those things reused and save them some money so they can put their money into seeds or things that we don't have for free.
Mm-hmm. And tell people where you're located. And if somebody has a sewing machine, I'll tell you what, if you're listening right now and you want to donate one, 773-763-9278, call right now. Let's see if we can get a couple of those sewing machines before the end of the show today.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be awesome. So where is Scarce based?
Well, we're in Glen Ellen, Mike, and we're just off of Roosevelt Road. Where old Route 53 goes under Roosevelt Road, there's an office complex, and we're right there. Our address is actually 799 Roosevelt Road in Glen Ellen. There's 10 buildings there, so it's a little bit confusing. But we're building 2, and this is our 24th year. I'm starting our 24th year.
Wow.
Last month, we started our 24th year, so that's kind of amazing, huh?
Yeah, that is. That's a career, Kay.
Talk talking trash for a long time. Who knew, right?
Absolutely. So call us. If you got one of those sewing machines, I wanna be able to have you talk to Kay, 773-763-9278. And you haven't used it in 10 years, and you know you're never going to use it again, but Kay will. And she will put it in the hands of people who can use it.
Right.
And the main reason you're on the show, I mean, I love what you do, and it, like I said, it's time for me to get some books out your way and other stuff, because you guys will recycle just about anything, won't you?
Yep, we'll get it reused or recycled. We absolutely will, and we're averaging now about 7,500 pounds a week.
Wow.
Of things being reused. So books and sewing machines, clothing buttons, garden tools. Yeah. I mean, it's been a very, very busy summer, but we're thrilled. We're thrilled.
So 7,500 pounds per week get reused in some way?
Not even counted recycled. Not counting recycling. That's reused. That's
not counting recycling.
That's not even the recycling. That's the reuse. That's the tubas going out to schools or clarinets. I always, when I give programs, I talk about, you know, if you've got a clarinet drying up in your closet, that little cork part, you know,
yeah.
We'd rather get it to a child who needs a musical instrument. So flutes and clarinets and trombones, they've been coming in like crazy this summer. We were able to get a lot out to the schools, so they were tuned up and ready for the kids as school began this year.
How many staff do you have?
We have 4 full-time staff. And then we have quite a few part-time folks, like one lady helps us with our computer 2 hours a week. You know, probably 6 or 7 full-time if you count all the part-time folks. Yep.
And how many volunteers do you get?
Oh, well, we have a wide variety. We have our regulars, which are about 12 people who come every week.
Yeah.
And then we have variety of businesses who come and work for half a day, volunteer half a day, or we've got scout groups that collect crayons and bring them in. We've got all kinds of special needs schools that, you know, they come in and they help us with the crayon project, and when the crayons are all made into super crayons, they get them for their school. So we've got quite a few. We just had a group from Lombard. It's a fraternity, and they came with 53 members, and they worked for 4 hours. They were exhausted when they left, but they were so grateful for all the ways that we're able to help kids in the schools have the supplies that they need.
Oh, that's got to make you happy, though, too, because you get 53 people in there at one time. You can get a lot accomplished, can't you?
We got a lot done, and they knew it, too. They could tell because shelves were stacked again. When you're having 40 to 50 teachers a day during the summer coming to choose school materials, you know, bulletin board supplies, textbooks, storybooks, binders, and things like that, you can't get the stuff on the shelves fast enough. So those folks came in, and every shelf was restacked, packed. Everything was sorted. Everything was organized. They came on a Friday, and we were open the next day for a Saturday. Boom, everything flew. The better we can have it organized, the better we can help people with not-for-profits get the supplies they need.
You mentioned the teachers. How does a teacher get in touch with you, and how do they know what kind of stuff you might have for them?
Well, you know, I wish we had money or time to do an inventory, you know, and keep it up. But mostly teachers call us or email us. If they put in the subject, they need a piano, right? Then I know a couple of pianos. And so then I find the emails with the pianos and we send it out. Sometimes stuff gets dropped off. We don't even know it's coming, Mike. And we had 9 tables dropped off from a company, and 8 went to one school and 1 went to another school within a half hour. We never would have had time to put it on an inventory and then immediately take it off. So it's kind of stuff comes in every day, and teachers come every day.
So sometimes you just have to come by just to see what's there that day.
Yep. And then books, we can do a little bit better with books, especially if we have if a teacher knows a particular, you know, they need fourth grade math. If they can email us the fourth grade math and maybe what the fifth grade books are, you know, the publisher or the third grade, so we can kind of find something that dovetails well. Yeah. If they can email us, then we will have volunteers look for it for them.
I have no idea that if there's anybody doing the kind of work that you're doing. It just, is there any organization that is as comprehensive as yours?
Well, that's, I guess, the trick. We had an intern several years ago from Stanford, and his Stanford didn't want him to do an internship in his own community, so they made him research not-for-profits doing something similar, and he was able to prove to them that there wasn't anything, anybody doing this variety, this scope of reuse and recycling, and so he was able to do his internship with us, which was really great because Stanford actually paid him to be an intern with us, which was fabulous because that saved us money to do something else.
Well, you get this. for what you're doing.
Thank you. Come on, do your show from our place sometime.
I would love that. And we get people to bring stuff in.
Teachers who come. Yep, you could be interviewing people who come to get things and people who drop things off. Yep.
That would be fabulous. We have to talk about that. We'll have to see if we can do something like that.
This past summer, a gentleman came in who was really pretty elderly.
Yeah.
And his wife was. And so their daughter, who lives in Kentucky, was helping them downsize. And so she found us in Kentucky. She found us online. It ends up we were just four blocks from her parents' home. So now he knows where we are. So as he cleans things and organizes pens and rulers, and they had a sewing machine for us, he feels so good that they're going to be reused. His wife was a teacher, so he feels really good that these things are going to be reused by students. He feels like it's the right place for him and his family to donate. So that's pretty cool.
And what's another great thing about your organization, you don't stop there with just manufactured stuff. Because you are in the process of putting together a commercial food scrap composting forum, which is been funded by the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, or DCEO.
Right.
And I know you're working with the Illinois Food Scrap Coalition and DuPage County. Tell me a little bit about this.
Well, you know, Mike, we feel really fortunate. DCEO is just a fabulous department for all of us here in Illinois, and they understand that we need education and promotion and understanding to move food scrap composting forward at the commercial level, the hotels, the grocery stores, and that. So they're funding actually a series of five composting forums, and so we are number two. They're going to be in Champaign in September. They're going to be in Bloomington in October, and they're going to be way down in Edwardsville sometime in between there. But we are hoping to bring people together who have a lot of food, so a hotel, a grocery store, a restaurant, schools, hospitals, bringing them together to say, what are the obstacles, what are the challenges, let's get this moving forward. As you know, Mike, I worked really hard on this food scrap law, and Jen Walling from the Illinois Environmental Council, she, of course, led the way with Senator Steens and so forth, getting this law passed. And now we need to get everything implemented. We have the law. We have companies who want the food scraps. We have haulers. We just need to get everybody in the same room and say, okay, what's it going to take to build these routes? What's it going to take to get it done? So DCEO graciously and generously is funding these forums to get all those people in the same room. So composters, haulers, city officials who might have to change some ordinances or might have to understand how the backs of restaurants are going to look, right? Different kinds of containers. Hospitals, jails. If you think about it, wherever there's a tremendous amount of food, there's going to be a need to gather that, rescue the water, rescue the mass, rescue the nutrients, keep it out of our landfills. It's like win, 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 but we've got to get everybody on the same page. So there's going to be like some talking parts, and then I think what's really nice about this forum is we're going to break into groups. So people who want to know more about the hauling part or people who want to know more about the implementation part, not really the biology of how compost happens, but how the infrastructure's got to work.
Mm-hmm. It just sounds, to me, it's fascinating. I've already been to one of your food scrap composting seminars last year all day. And it was weird. It was like a February or something, and it was a rainy day. It was nasty, and the place was packed. And it just shows the interest in this, that folks want to know how to get this done. And the state has paved the way by passing the law to make it easier, but the infrastructure is just not there yet.
It's not there yet, and people don't understand all the parts that have to be in place. So we want to get all those parts in place, and I think this is just a fantastic opportunity to have all these stakeholders in the same room. But we're really thrilled with some of the people who are signing up from hospitals and hotels, big, huge hotels. We're really glad they're going to be in one spot so they can say, hey, these kinds of bins don't work in our parking lot, or these kinds of bins don't work in our dock. And yeah. we have to have more pickups than once a week. So if we can get all these people talking at their different tables, I think we can come up with some really good solutions. But Cantini, it's, I should mention, too, Cantini Park, they've donated the space to us, which is very generous as well. So the county's helping, and Cantini and the Illinois Food Scrap Coalition is truly a statewide organization bringing people together on this issue.
And that's on the 16th of September. It's a Tuesday. Go to scarce.org. There's no fee. Cantini is at 1 South 151 South Winfield in Wheaton. I got to run, but thank you, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, take care. Have a great day. Bye.
That's an excitable woman. This is the best time of the year to work on your lawn, so why wouldn't you go with a slow-release nitrogen fertilizer that lasts up to 3 months, including over the colder months, and adds organic matter? I'm talking about Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer. It applied in the fall will help your lawn green up faster next spring and help it recover quickly from winter damage. Give the lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results. Naturally, visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. We're out of here. I'm going to play a little bit more of Bruce Henry. I want to thank everybody for being here. And great show, folks. And this is a point at which we say go green or
go home.
See you next week.